Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Some good texts are coming in. Many of you have the right answer now for our Upper Deck giveaway. We're doing this every single day this week, and we have two prize packs to give away. Upper Deck starter kits, Karen, one in each market. So one for $960, $960, one for $650, $650 over the course of all 5 days.
Absolutely. You know what? Were you a trading cards collector when you were
a kid? Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But not a collector in the sense of, I need to preserve these cards. This is something that's going to be very valuable one day. I was like most kids of my age. You just tried to collect the set. And the way you often got them at my school was you played them against each other. So closest to the wall or knocked down, whatever. There were a bunch of different ways to get those cards, and that's how it went. But it obviously kicked the crap out of the cards, making them worthless by collector standards.
Yeah, not in mint condition that you want to get, like, say, a Connor McDavid rookie card nowadays, Scott. Do you have one back in the day where you're like, this was, like, my prized possession? I was never, a card collector just because it wasn't my thing. My brother was. And maybe it's more of a boys thing than a girls thing growing up. I don't know what the case may be. But, yeah, he liked them. But for you, did you have one that was, like, this was awesome?
Well, yes, but it was more to do with the player I liked as opposed to this card's more valuable. Like, the cards that I would have, I don't even know. I'd probably go to the garage at some point and find them. Like, the cards that I would have that are probably more valuable if they're in decent condition are, like, Wayne Gretzky second year or Mark Messier rookie, something like that. I might have something. Or Mara Lemieux rookie, maybe it's not in terrible condition. Like, those would probably be the most valuable cards that I possibly have in my collection. Mm-hmm. But the cards that I valued most were the ones of my favorite player if it was some sort of special card. I was a big Brett Hull fan back in the day. So I got a couple of special Brett Hull cards and put those ones in plastic and made sure to separate them from the rest. Yeah. But that's obviously a little after I started the whole card collecting, just trying to build the old Opeachy set back in the day. Upper Deck, as you mentioned, like those are the cards that everybody's wanted for a very long time. And those are the cards we're going to give away this week.
Nice. So do you have a picture of him as well, drunkenly, or a video of him drunkenly chanting Let's Go Blues from the Stanley Cup parade as well?
No, they haven't made an NFT of that yet, but maybe. Maybe that's going to be the Brett Hull NFT that they put out there in today's version of digital trading cards. We'll give you another clue this segment. You know what? Why don't we give the clue now, and then we'll get into more of the conversation. As mentioned, we're giving away an Upper Deck starter kit every single day this week. In fact, we're giving away two. One in the Calgary text message inbox, 960, 960, one in the Vancouver, 650, 650. Your trading card binder will hold up to 252 cards, three packs of the 2021 Upper Deck Series 1, one exclusive sophomore sensations card, one poster, one trading card collector's guide. We've given two clues already. So the two clues that we gave out were number one overall draft pick in the NHL.
Yes.
And he is on the longest active point streak in the National Hockey League right now. Many people might not know who that is.
Might get it, though, after this one.
We will give you another clue.
Yes, this is the third one. And this one, if you put it together with the first two, it might make a lot more sense to you. He is not the captain of his NHL team. Not the captain of his NHL team.
You don't have to be the first person to text this in, but you have to have the right answer to win. Producer of this program, Jamie Dodd, will select one entrant from 960-960, one entry from, 650-650, and we will announce those winners before the end of the show. If you know the answer, text in, include your name. We'll get back to the winners by the end of the program today. While we're on this topic, because this guy fits one part of the criteria, Sidney Crosby. Do we underappreciate Sidney Crosby? Are we at that point of his career where we take him for granted a little bit?
I think so. I think I could say I could. Scott, when I found out that he had played 16 seasons in the NHL, and I said, holy cow, like, he's on the downward trend of his career. And you think, you know, he's been around for a long time. Like, he's played since he was 18. But to think that he's played 16 years in this league right now, and he is the Pittsburgh Penguins, I believe, number one in their division right now, a team that, you think about all the injuries that they have had over his career, not only his injuries, but all the injuries this team tends to have every single season. They find a way to always be in the playoffs and do things. I think it's, I could definitely say, like, at least right now in his career, I feel very underappreciated what he's done.
Great stat that came out with him on the weekend. And anytime you play into a Gretzky stat, you know you've done something pretty well. He's just the second player in league history to average a point or game or more in every single one of his first 16 seasons in the league. Only two guys have done it more. Gretzky and Gordie Howe have 17 seasons where they averaged a point a game or better, and Sid now has 16 of them, as he guaranteed that with his 55th point on the weekend.
It's funny, like, Sid the Kid doesn't even really work for him now. He still looks like a kid, Scott, and I think he probably still celebrates goals like a kid, but 16 years in the NHL, I marvel at that. I can't believe it's been that long.
We've talked a lot about how many points Artemi Panarin has been piling up lately and how great he is. There have been some that are trying to play Artemi Panarin into the Hart Trophy conversation, and look, if the Rangers were to make some sort of crazy run here in the last couple of weeks and make the playoffs, he'd get a lot more consideration. Now, Crosby played more games. He's played 10 more, but Crosby has as many points as Panarin. Like, Crosby is 1 point back of Brad Marchand, 2 points back of Austin Matthews, and it's been done in most part anonymously.
Very quietly, because he was hurt for a little bit this season, was he not? He missed a few games, if I'm not mistaken. But again, he just continues to put points up, and really no one's talking about this Pittsburgh Penguins team. I know they made a move, Scott, at the deadline. They acquired Jeff Carter, but it was kind of one of the less flashier moves, shall we say, in that division, with Washington picking up Anthony Mantha and the Islanders giving up that first overall pick, and then Boston picking up Taylor Hall. But there you go, Pittsburgh once again 67 points and sitting atop the division in the Eastern Conference. And like, again, just quietly have won 4 in a row, 8-1-1 in their last 10, but you don't hear much about them. I don't think I've watched a Pittsburgh Penguins game this season. I honestly think I could probably say that.
They were on the weekend. They were on NBC, 1-0 game against the Boston Bruins, and very few penalties. There wasn't a penalty called and not a goal scored until late in that game, but they ended up getting over, and they've done that most often. Crosby's missed just one game this season. It does tell you, though.
Oh, just one, eh?
Yes, just the one. He's played 48. They've had 49 games. And do the math on that. Pittsburgh has 7 games left in the regular season. That doesn't feel like much considering Vancouver still has 15 to go, but it gives you an idea of how compact the schedule is going to get here in a hurry for the Vancouver Canucks, who start playing at what Braden Holtby referred to as basically 3 every 4 nights the rest of the way starting tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough stretch, Scott. And I was looking at the tough stretch before we heard the news today, and hopefully it is just very minor in terms of Thatcher Demko. For those that don't know, Thatcher Demko, he hurt himself at the morning skate, or this morning, shall we say, so he is not available for tonight's game. But you've got tonight, you've got Wednesday, Thursday. Scott, there's a Ottawa Wednesday, Toronto on Thursday, and then you've got another game on Saturday. So 4 games this week in 6 nights, and it's going to be tough because when you look at Scott making a run in this playoffs, and Rick Ball mentioned it last week, like, there is a team, if a goaltender can get on a heater, you can make a run. You look to Andrew Hammond and what he did with the Senators down the stretch. I believe they were 16-1-2, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that, to get into the playoffs. But for the Canucks, because of this compact schedule, it can't just be one goaltender. It has to be both of them.
And the Vancouver Canucks, as you just alluded to, they are hopeful that this is a very minor thing. It's not, oh, Demko's out and he's flying back to Vancouver to be further evaluated. We don't have any sort of report like that. 2 in Ottawa, 2 against Toronto for the Vancouver Canucks, and then they come home for the first of 4 straight against the Edmonton Oilers. 2 in Vancouver, 2 in Edmonton. As for the Calgary Flames, they get to take care of the business that the Canucks kind of need them to take care of, and obviously they need taken care of themselves. And this ties into Vancouver's scheduling as well, because Montreal, and Eric Engels is going to join us next hour. We have to go to Montreal because that city right now, the temperature has been ratcheted up about 50 degrees in the last 2 weeks. For as much as Calgary's played well the last couple of games and put itself back in the mix, and Vancouver has been way better than expected coming out of the gate, this has everything to do with the Habs falling down on their face. 3-8 through their last 11 games. No loser points in there. And it was going to take a collapse like this to get the two teams that we talk about most often back into the race. And if it becomes 3-9 in their last 12 as of tonight, man, it is on. And there are going to be very few people in that city and maybe across Canada wondering if or thinking that Montreal can pull this back and get themselves into the postseason.
Scott, I look at this Montreal team and it confuses me. I understand the fact that losing Brendan Gallagher is big. It is. Losing Carey Price is big as well. But I thought they had the depth to maintain something. And maybe it is the fact that, I mean, they've lost a couple of players more to injury over the last couple of games as well. But maybe it has to do with the COVID compact schedule. Theirs not nearly as compact as what the Vancouver Canucks is, but they did miss 5 days and they've had to play, what did we discuss? 4 games in 6 nights for 5 weeks. So again, it is like the Canucks schedule, just their season ends a little bit sooner than Vancouver's does in terms of when their final games will be played. So maybe that's catching up with them. We've seen what happened in New Jersey. We saw what happened in Buffalo. Once you get COVID and that gets compact, the wear and tear on your bodies can maybe wear down. But I look at them, what they did against Edmonton. In those 2 games up in Edmonton, like, yeah, they lost that one game, but that's because of Connor McDavid. They played really well in that game. You look at the second game that they played that they won, that looked like a team, if they can play that way down the stretch, that could make some noise in the playoffs. And then it went away in Calgary, except for maybe, say, that first period in the Saturday night game. We just haven't seen it.
No, we haven't. And if you're a Habs fan out there, you're clinging to that game in Edmonton last week as your template for what you are hoping to see tonight. I can't say you're going to expect to see that tonight, but that was the Josh Anderson, we've got to play like it's a playoff game. And he went out and there scored a couple of goals. And Toffoli scored. He's on a bit of a roll. He's got 3 in as many games over the past week. He's up to 24 on the season. His good year continues. This is the type of game where a Corey Perry needs to do Corey Perry type things in and around the blue paint if you're the Montreal Canadiens. But I can understand why Habs fans have no confidence in that actually happening, because it hasn't happened very often over the last run of games. We got these texts coming in. Let's get to them. 960, 960, or 650, 650. This one. Of course it's a playoff race, says Rick in Richmond. Just do the math. The Canucks are 8 points back with 5 games in hand. If Vancouver wins 3 out of 5, the point spread is 2 points with the same number of games. You're right about that, Rick, but I would use Montreal as the example. The reason that I and many others, Karen, all season have said, well, you're not catching Montreal, is because of exactly what Rick points out, games in hand. You got to win them. And Montreal has won far less than we thought they were going to as they caught up in the games played column.
Yeah, so Vancouver obviously are going to make up those games in hand, Scott, towards the end of the season, not so much in these next coming weeks. And it looms large, though, doesn't it? Like, the final 4 games for the Calgary Flames are all against Vancouver. Four of the final 5, obviously, for Vancouver are against Calgary, where there's a 1 game against Edmonton sprinkled in there. And I know we're jumping ahead of ourselves, but you can start to maybe think, okay, maybe next week, that's where we get there, the start of next week, we get through this week. But I'm starting to circle those games, those Calgary-Vancouver games, because they could be very interesting down the stretch. And we didn't think so, say, a week ago, or when those games were announced. We thought maybe these are games that aren't even played. So now you're starting to think, okay, Calgary beats Montreal tonight, and they got Edmonton. Been okay against Edmonton this season, but not great. And then they've got some other games, and you start to think, like, could we be circling those Vancouver games as games that actually mean something? It's fun to think about.
The other thing that's going to play into this at some point is what teams that have already wrapped things up start to do. And listen, if Calgary or Vancouver is getting in, it's probably at a lower point projection than we had anticipated. If you want to go back 2-3 months, I, like many others, said that fourth place team's going to come in somewhere between 61 and 65 points. Now, Montreal still might get there. Maybe Calgary is nearly perfect down the stretch. Vancouver's got a little more margin for error. So that point total might, in fact, end up being somewhat accurate. But what's happened here in the last little while is those top three teams have taken more points than we thought they were going to. Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton. And those teams, like, I don't know if Nick Ehlers would be playing somewhere in the next 2-2.5 weeks if it was, we need this to get into the playoffs, or this is, all right, he's hurt, and we're not going to bring him back before the playoffs because we don't need to, and seeding doesn't really mean that much. We're going to see what Toronto Maple Leafs do. They've got a nice cushion atop the division. They've got some older bodies in that lineup. How often are they resting guys down the stretch? What does Edmonton do? We've already speculated about it because of Connor McDavid and the quest for 100 points, and can he get there? Does he not? We have the injury in the last game of the season from a couple of years ago. Teams like Vancouver and Calgary, there's a possibility that they benefit from those top teams sitting guys, taking care of their own business, and not worried as much about the results down the stretch.
Except, Scott, if you look at it this way, Toronto has four games left against Montreal. And three of those are next week, Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. So if you're the Calgary Flames and Vancouver Canucks, of course, Vancouver has two games against Toronto. If you're Vancouver or Calgary, you're hoping against all hope that Toronto does not have those games sewed up, or at least first place sewed up, because you need them to go hard against Montreal down the stretch. It's so funny how just you need everything to work out perfectly for you right now, Scott. But I do love the fact that with 2 weeks left in the season, I understand Vancouver and Calgary have a week to go after that. But I mean, to think about the middle of next week, we're going to have people clinching playoff spots, if not before then, but we could still have a playoff race to talk about. And I think if you asked us a week or 2 weeks ago, we would have said, probably not. 2 weeks to go in the rest of the regular season, play the kids.
Daryl Sutter joked about it on the weekend. Daryl Sutter joked about, you guys were saying these games didn't mean much 2 weeks ago. Yeah, because nobody thought Montreal was going to do a face plant the way that they've done here. Dell in Surrey says, it's a playoff race today. It will be tomorrow as well. This one comes in throwing some cold water on that idea. I don't like watching the Canucks lose, says this texter, who's obviously a Canucks fan, but I do think it serves the Canucks better if they're eliminated quickly rather than think about a meaningless playoff race. We need playtime for the youngsters with an eye on next year, or 2 years if you listen to the general manager, Jim Benning.
Now, we do have Eric Engels coming up later on the show, Scott, to talk about some things that are coming out of Montreal. And this just came in, a tweet from the TSN station in Montreal. Been told that Cole Caufield will make his NHL debut tonight with the NHL Flames. Now, this is interesting because what I understood was, I'd have to see what the cap issues are, because there's a reason he hadn't played, and that was cap issues. And it had to do with Caden Primo being needed because Carey Price was on, or I guess they didn't put him on IR, but they had to put Caden Primo on from the taxi squad onto the roster, and that was kind of preventing Cole Caufield. So another change, I think, would have to be made because of the fact that Caden Primo is still going to have to back up Jake Allen if he goes tonight. So be interesting to see what happens there, because either way, Montreal needs an injection of something in their lineup, and they need possibly a Cole Caufield to bring that for them.
Well, Lindgren can back up Jake Allen, and they can make the switch that way with Primo and Lindgren. There is some question as to whether or not Tatar's injury was more than we thought it was. Part of the reason that Montreal found itself in the spot with Caufield that they did, according to Engel's article on the weekend, is that they'd used three of their four emergency recalls already. So if they decided to use Caufield as an emergency recall, you're out of them. I mean, you got a couple weeks to go in the season, and do you want to spend your last dollar right there? Or do you have to do some other cap gymnastics? Do injury situations play into this? We'll see what finagling they do. I don't know that Cole Caufield is the savior, but this is something that Habs fans have been clamoring for quite some time. Just get somebody who looks like he might score into the lineup.
Yeah, exactly. We know he can put the puck in the net. He's won the Hobie Baker. We've seen him score for Wisconsin. We saw him come down his first two professional games with the AHL Laval franchise there. Puts the puck in the net. It's something that they need, Scott. And if he can bring even the slightest jump to their lineup, maybe that, you know, energizer bunny that is Brendan Gallagher. He's not going to play the same way, but he's a little spitfire that can get around the ice. So maybe this is what they need right now to give them some sort of life. Because from what I saw in the second and third period of that game on Saturday, that looked like a team that was didn't have that next gear to get to at this point. Definitely.
Do you have what you had last Wednesday in Edmonton? That's really the question they're asking, isn't it? Do you have what you have? Do you have that jam that they came out with? They played a hard game. That was one of the first games we've seen this season, Karen. They went, that looked like a playoff game. Oilers and Canadiens last week, that looked like a playoff game. And I've said it, you've said it, I think most people who've looked at the way Montreal's built said it. If they get into the playoffs, they might cause some teams some trouble. But can they get in? Can they play enough of the regular season style, the track meet style at times, a little more wide open, a little less physical? Calgary's a team that'll engage you physically as well. We'll see what happens to this afternoon, I should say. It's not even this evening. We don't have to wait that long. We're going to have our talking points settled out early in the day. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Chris and Duncan says, of course, it's a playoff race. Just look at the way Montreal is handling the stress. They are worried, and it shows. Need a save. Jake Allen's given them that for the most part. I didn't think Caden Primo was bad the other night.
No, you know what? I didn't think so either, Scott. Looking back at the goals, I mean, that Johnny Gaudreau goal that he scored, who was it? late in the first period, 31 seconds left, that long stretch pass. I mean,
that's
a
great
goal.
Pass.
No, no.
What a pass by Tkachuk, the backhand through the neutral zone, and then Gaudreau goes top shelf.
Yeah, he goes top shelf over Primo's glove hand. That's a good goal, but I look at that, and I think it really changed the fortunes in that game, too. I mean, honestly, Calgary didn't have any – they shouldn't have been tied after that first period, and then they kind of get the momentum, and then they come out a lot with a lot more jump in that second period. I mean, the Lucic goal, it's right off the face-off. He was kind of screened on that, so again, I don't blame him on that. The Gaudreau from Mangiapane, I mean, Goudreau's wide open on that net. How about that play by Mangiapane against Jeff Petrie on the boards? I mean, how he was able to get the puck, that was phenomenal. And then, again, basically after that point, I don't blame him on any of those goals. So he didn't lose the game for them, but you do. If you're going to give up four goals, I mean, you have to hope that you can put the puck in the net as well. And right now, this Montreal Canadiens team is struggling to do so. And Cole Caulfield gives them hopefully a little jump to do that.
A lot of adversity in Montreal right now. A little bit of adversity in the center of Canada. And I'm not talking about the center of the universe that Toronto thinks it is. I'm talking more central Canada. We will get to those comments next and get your texts in as well. It's Rintoul and Sermon, and you'll hear from Mark Scheifele right after this.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Braden Holtby gets the start for the Vancouver Canucks tonight, this afternoon, depending on where you're watching the game. It's obviously an evening game in Ottawa, but an afternoon game in Vancouver. Afternoon game in Calgary. No Noah Hanifin, sounds like he is done for the season. We will await official word from the Flames. No Thatcher Demko for the Canucks on the bench. Archer Silov's backs up, but they do not expect that it is much of an injury to Thatcher Demko, not one that's going to keep him out for any length of time. The expectation is that maybe he starts a game this week. In fact, back-to-backs coming up on Wednesday and Thursday. And in Calgary, Montreal is going to inject Cole Caulfield into the lineup. At least that's what we are led to believe from minds closer to that organization than ours.
It's there's a lot of moving parts today, Scott. We've got a lot of breaking news on our station, not to mention that Nick Ehlers is done for the season in Winnipeg, which is brutal news for them as well. So
regular season, just to clarify.
Yes,
done
sorry,
for the regular season.
Yeah, I said season, but yeah, I should clarify. Regular season, but Noah Hanifin's looks to be a little bit more serious. Of course, reports he might need surgery. Daryl Sutter, I believe, is set to speak right about now, Scott, so hopefully we get some clarification on that. This sounds like something that maybe needs to be clarified by the team with it out there right now. Also, we've heard, Scott, about the fact that there is a new TV deal in place for the NHL. Of course, we knew ESPN signed that massive one earlier this year, 7-year deal, but that was only for half, right? And a lot of it was streaming as well. And then today we found out Elliot Friedman confirming that it's Turner and TNT that are going to get the other half of that, not Fox and NBC. And this just came into HBO Max is getting into sports for the first time. I got to read this a little bit more, but it looks like that would probably be for obviously for the streaming purposes of it.
Into the NHL. Sorry, you said sports,
yeah.
But you mean it's going to be hockey-related as well?
I think so.
And we've seen HBO in the past do 24/7, then they pulled out of that series. So there has been some interest, but perhaps this is a streaming option for the National Hockey League. Lots of exciting stuff happening around the game that all of us love so much and enjoy talking about on a daily basis here with Rintoul and Sermon. Scheduling possibilities, I guess the general manager is considering those.
Yeah.
Do they want to go with a more conference format? Do they want to leave some open dates? Friedman detailed that on the weekend, and we don't have to go into all the permutations here, but basically one way you would have better balance within the conference, and you would have some open dates where you could maybe bump up your Canadian content after what we've seen in the North Division this season. And the other way would be a little more division heavy, but you would have divisional playoffs the way they operate right now.
Yeah, so either one option two has the conference playoffs, likely, Scott. One division has, or one playoff system has the divisional playoffs. I know Gary Bettman loves the way that he has the playoffs set right now. He loves those interdivisional rivalries in the first round. I'm more of a 1-8, 2-7, 4-5, 3-6 kind of person. I've always liked that. I always think too, they should reseed like the NBA after the first round. So if 8 beats number 1, You know, he's not going to play the 4-5 matchup. He's going to play, say, number 2 if he wins. I always like that. What I like about one of these options, though, is I'm a big fan of 6 games left over for quote-unquote special scheduling. Because I do think there is some, what we're seeing from this year, and not 9 games or 10 games against the same team, but what if you're Vancouver and you got to see Toronto a couple more times? I mean, it might not help you in the standings, but it might be nice for the fans to get to see Austin Matthews a couple more times, or Toronto fans get to see Pettersson a couple more times, or you go with like more Toronto-Montreal because it's original 6, more Battle of Alberta. I like that. I like having 6 games left over for that special scheduling.
I think everybody's on board with that, and there'd be some clamoring for certain games, and we'll see who actually gets those. Toronto-Vancouver makes a lot of sense from a revenue-generating standpoint. You know, the broadcast is going to be on board with stuff like that. I think everybody likes that aspect. The question is, what does that cost you? Is it worth doing that if it's going to be divisional playoffs? I'm with you. I like conference playoffs, but the 2 formats that Elliot rolled out were, look, if you have these special games, that means we're going to go the divisional playoffs route. I think there's a lot of people that are more on board with what you talked about in terms of conference playoffs, because that leads to the greater potential for the 2 best teams meeting in the conference final. If it means divisional, which is what we're going to see this year, yeah, if you have a weak division that year, great. If you don't, if you got a strong division, you kind of feel like you got shortchanged.
I think the Maple Leafs might go with the conference one, Scott, if I'm...
Yeah, they might.
Recent history has anything to say about it. I do hate the fact sometimes that you're going to get, you know, the top 2 teams in the conference because they're in the same division playing in the second round. I mean, that does suck, but also too, it can lead to some really good hockey matchups. Again, I'm more for the conference, but I think I wonder, do you know, like if you were to pull GMs, do you know which they would prefer? Have you ever heard someone like, say, a straw poll out there? Because I wonder if the GMs like this divisional matchup because of the fact, maybe because it's more of a rivalry, they get more revenue. I don't know.
Well, here's the problem. And that's the idea. That's the theory. And you're right. If you end up getting a couple of years of the Battle of Alberta, or if you get Seattle and Vancouver in the playoffs 2 of 3 years and you develop more of a rivalry, because we all know that's where rivalries are generated. They're not always geographical like there is in Alberta. Vancouver-Chicago was a rivalry because they met in the playoffs so many times. So that's where we really get our rivalries. I think it'll depend on who you talk to. There'll be some that say, yeah, I like our divisional setup, so the likelihood of us getting an attractive playoff matchup that we can sell and it's going to get our fan base fired up, yeah, we'll go that way. They always think of themselves. Very few of them think of the game itself.
Scott, just some breaking news, and it is official. Calgary Flames making it official. Brad Treliving, the GM, announcing defenseman Noah Hanifin will require season-ending shoulder surgery as a result of the injury he sustained last game. So not the knee or ankle, it was the shoulder. Again, he hit his head on the play, but Scott, if you see how he goes down and he kind of looks like he's reaching back and awkwardly falls on that, that kind of looked like the third thing on that injury, but you could tell something was significant in the fact that he was that close to the bench and couldn't get up to get off. You know, you think maybe, you know, these guys can struggle to the bench. If it was knee and ankle, he could have maybe crawled or whatever to the bench, but he really didn't move and had to be helped off. So very disappointing move, or at least injury, for the Calgary Flames. Season-ending shoulder surgery for Noah Hanifin.
Man, a lot of news coming down in the National Hockey League today. Noah Hanifin, season-ending surgery. Nick Ehlers out for the rest of the regular season. Thatcher Demko not part of the Canucks tonight, though it doesn't look to be anywhere near as serious as those first 2 injuries that I mentioned. Nick Ehlers out. Mark Scheifele was in, sort of, on Saturday night. He was the guy that got chosen by Paul Maurice to set the example with. Mark Scheifele spoke today after being benched on Saturday in another loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jets are in their longest losing streak of the season. It's only 3 games, which in most markets in Canada seems like a very small detail. But this isn't the way things have been going for the most part. And this isn't the way things have been going for Scheifele, who's had a very good season. Here's what he had to say about getting sat and stapled to the pine.
Yeah, I understand, you know, where he's coming from. You know, I don't agree with him benching me. So, you know, but we don't have to agree on everything. You know, he's my coach. I'm the player. We don't have to agree on everything. So, you know, that's the business of sports. So, you know, I'll be ready to play tonight and that's about it.
So as you're sitting there and you don't get out, and then a power play even comes by, are you teed off? Does it light a fire? What kind of emotions are you going through?
Everything. You know, you're definitely pretty pissed off. You know, I understand where he was coming from, but like I said before, like I didn't agree with it. I didn't agree with it. You know, at the time it took place, and you know, the magnitude of the game. So, you know, I definitely didn't agree with it. So, you know, we'll leave it at that.
That's okay. That's okay for him to take it that way. He shouldn't like it. And that is part of the point of the exercise that Maurice is going through. And we can agree or disagree on whether or not he should have sat him. Let's hear from Paul Maurice first before we get into that discussion.
I would describe them as private, and then, you know, necessary, constructive, and over.
That's how Maurice described his conversations with Shifley about this. Do you have a problem with what Maurice did?
No, it seems that lately, Scott, he's trying to find something to light a fire under his team. We saw the exact same thing happen the game before with Connor Hellebuyck. He pulled him, after 3 goals on 6 shots and midway through the first period. And guess what? Connor Hellebuyck said after it, too. I didn't like it. I didn't agree with it. I never like being pulled. Yes, but sometimes your head coach has to try and get a way to spark your team. And you're sending a message when you pull Connor Hellebuyck, Scott. You're also sending a message to your team that this is, whatever case it is, I still don't know what it is with Shifley, but apparently it was going against core values of their team. So whatever Shifley did, the rest of the teammates probably know what it was. And he's sending a message, we don't do that. I'm willing to bench our captain. We don't do that.
And it's okay for them not to agree. They don't have to see eye to eye on everything. Maurice's job, get the team to perform at its best, not just get to Mark Shifley to perform at his best. I do see this as different than what Kirk Muller did to Brendan Gallagher last year. Kirk Muller benched Brendan Gallagher in a playoff game. That, to me, is different. And it's always your opportunity. It's the one hammer you have as a head coach now in the National Hockey League. But with all due respect, with what Shifley talked about, the magnitude of this game with the Toronto Maple Leafs, is it that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things? No. Is Saturday night's game against Toronto that big of a deal?
No, because it looks like Toronto's going to run away with first anyways at this point. You would have been, 4 points back instead of 8 points back? So I guess, yes, if you had eyes set on first in the division, then yes, it's a bigger deal. But in the end, Paul Maurice needs to send a message more to his team, Scott, that for us to have success, we need to play the right way, the way that we've been playing all season. And I guess Mark Shifley just ended up being the scapegoat for that. And I should say, Mark Shifley's not the captain for the Jets. That's Blake Wheeler. But if you're going to bench your top player, you know, send a message to your top player, that's still the same thing as basically benching your captain.
When Muller benched Gallagher last year, I had a problem with it because of the consequence of the game. Montreal was involved in a series with Philadelphia that was very low scoring, trouble producing offense, and Brendan Gallagher, and you're watching it right now because he's out of the lineup. Brendan Gallagher represents everything you want in the playoffs. And what happened the next game? And you could say that it worked for Muller because Gallagher came out that next game and he went out and scored and he got hit in that very next game and ended up it was Niskanen that got him. And remember, he got his jaw broken at the time as well. And we talked earlier about him smiling. Harn Ryan mentioned him smiling. Well, he's smiling through blood in that occasion. Like, what are you guys doing, referees? How are you guys not calling this? That's a dirty play out there. I didn't agree with because of the potential consequence. There's no great consequence. There really isn't. A couple points in the regular season?
No, you're making a point to your team, Scott. That's all you're doing. You're making a point. You've done it in back-to-back games now, and that may show where Paul Maurice thinks about where his team is right now. You know, pulling your goaltender and benching your best player. Yes, I know. Thanks for all the texts in. Winnipeg Jay, other people saying, yes, Wheeler is the captain. I got that wrong. Shifley is their best player.
Yes, he is.
Clarify that.
Yes, he is.
There Similar are people thing. Asking, bench your captain.
There are some people who have just joined. No, it's okay, Karen. There's some people who have just joined the program. I just wanted to get them up to speed. Thatcher Demko not playing tonight. People are wondering, well, why is Mikey DiPietro not the backup? Because they finally sent him to Utica because he hasn't played in over a year and they wanted to get him some games. So he's serving that quarantine down there. If they were to recall him right now, he'd have to serve another quarantine. They don't think that Demko's out long-term. So that's why DiPietro is not the backup. There are other questions about Elias Pettersson. This was some news that came out over the weekend. And to me, this, well, it was probably not viewed in this context. It feels like a big blow to the unlikely Vancouver Canucks run to the postseason. Look, Montreal's playing them back into the mix, and Vancouver can help its own cause tonight against Ottawa. But the one card they were going to have to play down the stretch, if their goaltending got hot and the tandem was playing well and they were stringing some results together, as they started to get more and more tired, because this schedule is going to take its toll, they were going to have this fresh Elias Pettersson to plug back into the lineup. Yeah. And yeah, maybe he's rusty, but he's still your best offensive weapon. Canucks have struggled to score goals for the most part since he went out. They've adopted a different brand of play, and you were going to get this guy. And I don't know how many games he was going to play, but people thought it was a possibility. Chris Johnson reported on the weekend that he is likely done for the season. Now, he didn't say that is assured, and the Canucks have not commented on it, but it sounds like he's not going to play the rest of the way, which is that's a tough one to take if you're trying to fashion the path to the playoffs for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's Scott. I was of the mind that if you're out of the playoff picture, I wouldn't have brought him back, because you're not going to rush him back from injury just to play some games that aren't meaningful. But if he was, you know, getting up to speed and, you know, you're 4 points out of a playoff spot with 5 games to go, or whatever the case may be, and there looked like if you get him back in there that you could give him a spark, yeah, you play him. But at this point, too, it's very disappointing. He hasn't played since March 2nd. That's a long time that he hasn't played. And we know it's a wrist injury. We do know that. We don't know the extent of it. We don't know if it was something torn. We don't know if it was something broken. They haven't commented on that. We do know he hasn't required surgery to this point. I did think it was a pretty good sign. I follow him on Instagram, Scott, and he did post a picture for the first time of himself on the ice and said basically it felt good to be back. So I took that as a good sign. I think that was earlier in the day on Saturday, or at least Friday night, and then CJ comes out with this news on Saturday that he's likely done for the season. So I was a little mixed messaging, I thought, in there, but or maybe it's just me reading too many things into the fact that Elias Pettersson's back on the ice. But either way, it's a tough blow for this season, because he is a spark that could maybe drag you into the playoffs if you're looking for that down the stretch.
Last 48 hours or so, some very tough injury news, some bad news for teams in the National Hockey League. It's Rintoul and Sermon. Really good weekend. We commented on this earlier, and because Eric Engels is coming up at the top of the hour, we got notes and quotes in the back half of our final hour of the program. I want to get to the baseball story of the weekend. There haven't been a lot of these in recent years, and most of them get associated with either opening day or the playoffs. Good weekends in baseball. It was a really, really good weekend for the sport. The centerpiece of it, the crown jewel, was Padres-Dodgers. You've got an exciting, young, up-and-coming team in San Diego. You've got the reigning World Series champs and the powerhouse that are the Dodgers, and that series was all kinds of great. Fernando Tatis was the main figure as far as individual talent goes, all the home runs that he hit. And Tatis Jr. is doing the shuffle step, and he's doing the McGregor strut, and he's going back at Trevor Bauer. That was awesome, and Trevor Bauer's comments about it were awesome. But it was the comeback that you referenced earlier in the show as well, Karen. Like, there were a lot of people who were watching Oscars last night, and I was seeing this on Twitter. I maybe saw combined 20 minutes of the Oscars. I was more watching the baseball game. But a lot of people, once the Oscars were done, oh, this baseball game's still going on. It was great drama going down the stretch and into extra innings as well.
Yeah, you don't see comebacks from 6 runs down with 3 innings left to go, Scott, very often, do you? And just the way that they did it, and the fact it went to extras, and I think in the bottom of the 10th, I believe the Dodgers had the bases loaded at one point, and they couldn't drive in a run, and it was, they had Clayton Kershaw had to come up and bat because they ran out of position players. So Kershaw has to bat, and he got some good contact on the ball, but ended up striking out, which I guess doesn't surprise too many people. But yeah, there was a lot of theater in that game. You were watching the Oscars. Well, in my living room, apparently it was Revenge of the Nerds 2 that was taking our eyes away from this game. And I remember looking on Twitter going, it's bottom of the 10th. Let's go back to this and watch this game, because it's a little bit more entertaining than Revenge of the Nerds. But it's good for baseball when games like that get played, and especially when it's the Dodgers, because, you know, for them to have a rival now in that division that is, you know, they've got the young stars, but it's just to have the Dodgers involved in this and to piss off the Dodgers fan base as well is kind of fun. So I do think, like, that was an incredible weekend for baseball at Chavez Ravine there.
Well, tough to fault your other half. Some people want to see the Oscar-nominated movies before they watched the awards and Revenge of the Nerds 2, that brand new movie that they came out with. I can understand why that was the viewing of choice last night.
No thanks. No thanks.
I kid, of course. But it wasn't just that series. The Jays, a lot of people in this country watched that. Hyunjin Ryu looks like he avoided injury, but they got a combined pitching gem and a 1-0 win and a series win over Tampa Bay. There was an incredible catch by the Yankees in a losing cause. Clint Frazier in left field made one of the best catches you're going to see this season, and that was on replay after replay. There's a grand slam for Trevor Story. And then there was this. Madison Bumgarner pitches a no-hitter, or did he? They've changed some rules in Major League Baseball. Okay, you've answered already. Major League Baseball feels differently. I don't know what our listeners think about this. If you missed this story this weekend, so one of the rules we've seen changed, and I think a lot of people are on board with it. We saw it extra innings again last night, the runner on second base. Like, I saw a lot of people commenting, I didn't like the idea of this going in, but now I love it. It's the best change I've seen in baseball in years, have a lot of people said. Mm-hmm. The 7-inning doubleheader game.
Yes.
Madison Bumgarner does not allow a hit. Only base runner got there on an error. But it is not classified as a no-hitter by Major League Baseball because in 1991, Faye Vincent said it's got to be 9 innings to qualify as a no-hitter, an actual no-hitter. Do they need to change it back?
Yes, they do. Because he was given the complete game. He was given the win, but he wasn't given the no-hitter. And it's not his fault that MLB decided that they were going to cap the game at 7 innings. He went the allotted number of innings that MLB says is a game and didn't allow a hit. How is that not a no-hitter? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Just because you said back in the day, like, if the rules changed, you should change the rules with them. Like, if you say a game is 7 innings in doubleheader situation, then it's a full game. It's a no-hitter.
So the counter-argument is this. Did the Edmonton Oilers make the playoffs last year?
No.
Okay, but if you're going to count their stats as playoff numbers, then didn't they make the playoffs even though it was a qualifying tournament? Because we're arguing about the same types of things. And in both cases, the NHL and Major League Baseball, they kind of want to have their cake and eat it too. We don't want to mess with the tradition, even though we're kind of messing with the tradition here.
But that's the thing, right? Like, MLB themselves changed the rules. So I do think that because they changed them, like, are they sticking with these going forward? Is this like or is this still just a COVID world thing?
That's what they're doing right now. But I can tell you that the way people have reacted to both of them overall in terms of shortening some game times, I think they're both going to stay.
Yeah, I love the runner at second base. I think it makes for an intriguing game. I honestly don't want to see a 17-inning baseball game. Like, that's just not me. You know, how many guys are going to see off the bench? You're going to see more pitchers hitting the ball like in the National League. Like, I just don't want to see that. I want to see the games ended, and they end in a lot more fun and drama, I think, this way as well. This comes in Patrick D in Calgary, I'm assuming 960, a 7-inning no-hitter nonsense. So that's a traditionalist. I understand that. I do understand it, but baseball changed the rules, so you got to change it with it. He threw a perfect or a no-hitter. What if he had not hit that batter, Scott, and it would have been a perfect game? Do you think there have been more people going, no, that's a perfect game?
No.
Than a no-hitter?
No. I think it would have been argued even more vehemently on the other side, quite frankly, Karen, because now what Patrick and many others are going to say is, okay, look, if you're going to give Madison Bumgarner a no-hitter after 7 innings of no-hit ball, I guess we got to go back into the annals and look at guys who had no-hitters but couldn't go past the 7th inning because of pitch counts. Do we give them no hitters? Do we not give them no hitters? What do we do? How are we supposed to compare? So the way they're doing it right now is saying it's an unofficial no hitter. It's almost a separate category that we put it
like
into.
Like an asterisk? It's
kind
gonna be an asterisk in the record book.
Like, you no hit people, but you didn't no hit them by traditional standards is basically what this is being viewed as.
What do you view it as? You didn't give your view there. Because, yeah.
I'm more of the traditionalist in this sense. Okay. I'm more of the traditionalist. I understand what Patrick's saying, and, well, your point is very valid. Like, Madison Bumgarner did exactly what he's supposed to do. He goes out, and he no-hits a team, and the game is over. There's nothing more he can do. Like, he doesn't have 2 more innings to pitch. Like, I totally understand what you're saying. But baseball has this history with it. And if we're going to compare what he did to what other no-hitters have been, we have to use the same context. So I feel like either way that you talk about this, it's hypocritical. I guess I'm hypocritical on the traditional side of this one. Greg, are you going to break the tie? You're a big baseball fan.
Yeah, I'm on probably Karen's side, I think, on this debate. It's a tough one. I think it should count for something. But I don't think even these pitchers really want to be, I don't know, classify it on their own. I think I saw a quote for one of the pitchers saying, you know, screw that. I would rather just do it a 9-inning game. Don't give me any kind of recognition for that. So if the players are speaking that way, it makes me think that it's not as big of a deal as people in the media are making it out.
I would have loved it if Madison Bumgarner, after the 7th inning, was like, guys, can we play a couple more? I got a special thing going here.
Did you hear what he said in his postgame, though?
Oh, I did. It was pretty funny.
He threw Manfred under the bus.
Yeah, he said, I want to thank Rob Manfred for the 7-inning games. Thanks. Someone else texted in this. It's a good question. If a pitcher had a no-hitter through 7, the game gets called due to weather, do we call it a no-hitter?
Under
we don't.
The rules of the game, I guess,
we
no,
don't. We don't. We go, oh, that kind of sucks. Jamie,
this one
texted us this. Someone sent it in that it's a little league no-hitter. So Madison Bumgarner had a little league no-hitter.
Hey, he might take that. I don't know if he actually pitched in the little league. It's one of those things, Scott, where we see rules sometimes, like you have to change them as you evolve. And if MLB is evolving to make it a 7-inning game, maybe they have to evolve in the sense that no matter how many innings, if you pitch a complete game, in the sense of what under the rules, it should be a no-hitter. Like just Major League Baseball maybe has to look at this and just maybe adapt with the times.
Just qualify them in two different categories. 7-inning no-hitter, 9-inning no-hitter. If that's what you're going to do, someone else said, call it a double-header no-hitter. Tyler says the pitcher didn't make the rules. 9-inning rule was introduced 30 or so years ago. It's a no-hitter. And look, Major League Baseball probably likes it better this way because we're talking about it even more.
Exactly.
We're having a debate about it.
We're talking about Fernando Tatis Jr. and his antics, which are not bad in my point. Good antics, Scott, getting eyes on baseball and talking about young players and about the Padres. And, you know, is this good for the game? Again, this is good things. Baseball needs more talking points on it to get more eyes on their product. And I think a lot of the things they're doing are good. You know, they're trying to speed up games. They're trying to figure that out, except if you maybe watched that Jays-Rays game last night, that might be, or yesterday afternoon. That might be one of the games, Scott, where they're like, this is what we don't want in baseball, a 3-plus-hour game of one hit or one nothing win. That's not exactly what you like, but I do think it's trending in the right direction. I just think that if you're going to say it's a 7-inning game and that's it, it's a 7-inning game. Give them the no-hitter.
You're handing out door prizes to everybody. That's what's happening here. Participation ribbons
participation
over the place.
Ribbons?
Karen Sermon, Scott Rintoul. I'll tell you what everybody's eyes are going to be on this afternoon. Calgary, Montreal. And yes, there'll be some Vancouver eyeballs on that one because it gets going before the Canucks and Senators get going. And yes, it impacts this playoff race. We will head to Montreal. Man, it might feel like it's mid-August there right now with the amount of heat Canadiens fans are generating. We'll get the latest from Eric Engels next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Ole, 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 ole.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Something tells me this isn't what they're singing in Montreal right now. I'm guessing it doesn't feel like this way in Habland, if you will.
It might be a more dour ole, ole, ole.
Oh, just maybe. Oh, just maybe.
Well, I would sing it, but I'm not going to sing on air. But yeah, maybe a little bit, a little understated at this point in time.
Whatever the music is when you're white knuckling on the steering wheel, that's the music that's being played in Montreal right now. That's what people are doing. They're probably looking for any type of distraction so that they don't think about the Canadiens in the here and now. It is tense time. It wasn't expected to be. It really wasn't expected to be. Oh, Montreal is going to come back down to earth after the 10-game hot start. Sure. They weren't going to go 7-1-2 and replicate that over 10-game stretches the rest of the way. But they'd given themselves so much breathing room, and they had so many games in hand, that a situation that we're seeing right now, it just didn't seem very likely. It really didn't. Montreal's had to go 3-8 over its past 11 and lose all 8 of those in regulation just for us to get to a point, Karen, where we're trying to make the math look like it is, in fact, a playoff race.
Yes, and the math still is on the Montreal Canadiens side. Like, that's the thing, you know, people do understand. It's still on Montreal sides. They are still in the driver's seat when it comes to making the playoffs. However, Scott, I think it has to do with, if you're a Montreal fan, it has to do with the fact that you're not playing very well. You don't have your number one goaltender, and you don't have your number one winger, the driver of this team. So I guess you're hoping that Cole Caulfield can do something, but that's a lot of ask for a guy who's never played an NHL game, Scott. And then when you look at Calgary and Vancouver, I mean, now the math is on Vancouver's side in terms of games in hand. Calgary, you have one more game that you can hold, you know, in the palm of your hand. You say, if we win this one, we put ourselves 2 points back. That's all that we can do. So I do think that there is a playoff race. I'm excited for the fact that we are talking about if there is a playoff race, Scott. But again, things can change very drastically by tomorrow morning. Like, very drastically.
Which is why my vote goes to check back with me tomorrow. Like, check back with me tomorrow. And if Calgary wins today, now it's on. Even if Vancouver weren't to get its result, yeah, it gets a little more difficult, but they wouldn't have lost any ground to Montreal. They'd still have 5 games in hand. Vancouver wins today, Calgary wins today, now it's on. And now things get a little more tense for a Canadiens team that will head home but has to face the Maple Leafs right after this. It's not going to be easy. Montreal, like most teams in this division, has had a really weird thing going on in terms of specific teams. Like, they can't win against Calgary. They virtually can't lose against Edmonton. They picked up a point in every single game that they played Vancouver and won 6 of those games, and yet has struggled with a team like Ottawa. I mean, this Montreal club has been all over the map. Can they summon the playoff type of game they got last Wednesday? That's really what it comes down to in Montreal. That's what they had last week. Felt like it was a critical game. Josh Anderson led the way in them getting over against the Edmonton Oilers. Do they have that game in them for the 3rd and 4 nights in Calgary? We will talk to Eric Engels of Sportsnet in Montreal about that and much more. Eric, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are well. What would you classify the temperature as in Montreal right now as far as the Canadiens fan base is concerned?
Oh, okay. It's a good thing you threw in that qualifier, because I was going to say it's a little too cold to play golf, but maybe tomorrow. temperature in the fan base, another thing that's difficult to gauge when you're not around the fans. But I would suggest that, you know, they feel there's a certain level of urgency required in this game. And, you know, I feel that it's funny, you know, the Canadians themselves talked about this 5-game series against Calgary in April as a playoff simulation. And that's really what it is. It's a simulation. It's not the real thing. And the urgency has been there for Calgary because obviously their lives depend on it. And, you know, to say that the Canadians could match that just by trying to manufacture some urgency would be kind of bending the truth here, because you can't manufacture urgency. It's either there or it isn't. Right now, I think it's there. I think for the first of these 5 games that they played against each other, with the possibility that the Flames could pull within 2 points and Vancouver put some pressure on by winning, you know, their last game, that urgency is there. I think the urgency was more there on Saturday night and the way the Canadians started the game, but they weren't able to finish it with that same level of urgency. And I think it had to do with the fact that their lineup was depleted and they were down to 10 forwards in the 3rd period and chasing the game, and they just couldn't find it. So I think tonight they'll start with it, and if they play a good game, they'll finish with it and probably 2 points. And I think it's time that the Canadians showed the Flames their best selves, because they haven't done it so far in any of the 8 games prior.
How much of it is the construct of this roster? How much of it is just injury? How much of it is schedule starting to catch up? Or is it a confluence of all three?
It's a confluence of all three, and not necessarily the structure of the roster, but more so the roster constraints and the issues that they've had with the cap and with the recall situation that honestly is too boring to get into the minutiae for your listeners. But all to say that they've had to juggle without being able to have some flexibility within their roster and dress the most optimal roster that the coach sees fit, because of cap issues and because of the fact that they burned three of four recalls, non-emergency recalls, on the first day after the trade deadline. So, it's really complicated, and I'm personally completely sick of talking about it. But I think, you know, tonight, I think there's a really strong chance that Cole Caulfield's going to make his NHL debut, and they're going to make some moves that enable them the flexibility that they haven't had. And it's going to also depend on a couple of players being injured for the Canadiens. And Jonathan Drouin was sick, and we'll see if he's able to go. So there's a whole number of things that are up in the air here. But yeah, I mean, it is a confluence of all those things that you mentioned, Scott, because the schedule has been unrelenting, and the urgency, you know, like I said, they've been comfortably in a playoff spot. So to burn it, when you're playing three games every four nights and playing back-to-back and four games a week, and it's been like that since the COVID pause, it's, you know, you can't manufacture it. It's either there or it isn't, and it hasn't been so far.
Eric, if you do see Cole Caulfield tonight, or at least in down the stretch, what do you expect, or what do you think the Habs expect for him to bring?
You know what, Karen, like, a lot of people are looking at Cole Caulfield and saying, wow, this is too much pressure for him, and he's got to be the savior, and this, not like, it's all ridiculous to me. This kid, number one, is made for pressure. You don't become an elite goal scorer at every level if you shy away from pressure. Number two, he could come into the lineup. He doesn't need to score. He's a threat to score when he's on the ice if he's playing his game, and I expect that he will play his game if he plays. And just being a threat to score is one more thing that the Flames would have to pay attention to, and could detract some of the attention and some of the pressure off Caulfield's teammates for this game. And that's why, you know, I've argued over the last week or two that, you know, they, despite the roster issue that they've had, there was ways to work around it and get him in sooner, because they haven't been able to score goals in Brendan Gallagher's absence. The only team that scored less than them since Gallagher went down on April 5th is the New York Islanders. You know, they're averaging under two goals a game, and they've had this kid sitting in the stands just watching. I mean, it's been absolutely ridiculous, for lack of better terms. But now it looks like his strong possibility is going to play. And, he can't solve that issue all on his own. He doesn't have to. But if he just plays his game and is a threat to score, it's going to open up possibilities for some other players. And I think, you know, it was worth testing that out a long time ago. It's certainly worth testing it out now that it's clear that they have an issue there and need to resolve it.
Brendan Gallagher out, you just mentioned it. We know what he means to this team. We know what he means in terms of energy and kind of the engine that drives this team. But is it the fact that he's been out, or the fact that other players in this lineup need to play better?
I think it's both. I mean, it's definitely both. You know, when you lose a guy like Brendan Gallagher, you've got to account for his absence by committee. I think you look around the league, you could probably pick one player on each team that if you lose that guy, it's big trouble for any team. And, you know, in Vancouver, would it be Horvat? I know Pettersson's been out for a little while. I know they've been managed to do decently without him, and I think he's a superstar, and I love watching. He's one of my favorite players to watch in the NHL. But if they had lost Bo Horvat, I really wonder how much hope they'd still have as they're chasing things down from a very difficult spot to begin with. Gallagher is that kind of guy from Montreal. He's the spark plug. He's the guy that when you need something, you need something to get going, he's the one, and he's going to do it. So it's tough to overcome. It's not an excuse. You know, the Canadiens were built to be a deeper team this season. That said, you know, Gallagher's out, Byron is questionable, Thomas Tatar is questionable, Carey Price is on the sidelines. There's, you know, it's not an easy situation. These are key players for the Canadiens, and even if they have more depth than they had a year ago, there's only so much that you can have to sustain those kinds of issues. So we'll see what they come up with. We'll see who's able to dress and who's able to play. Either way, if those guys I just mentioned are able to play in this game, you know, they're going to be playing at a suboptimal level. So you got to do it as a team. It's a team sport. That's what I love most about it.
Looking at the blue line, I believe since Ben Chiarot's been back and paired with Shea Weber, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they're minus 15 overall. What's going on with that duo?
That's one of the prime examples of plus minus not always being completely representative. You know, they're on the ice with three other guys, and it's all situational and circumstantial. I won't say that it's completely unrepresentative. But those guys, if you look at the minutes played and who they're playing against, it's way up there. And there was a couple games where the team just didn't play well, and so they got caught as part of the five-man unit to get scored on. Manufacturing offense could mitigate some of that, but I think it's a real challenge for Sherratt and Weber when every night they're going up against either Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl or Mark Scheifele, or go through the superstars on each team in this division. And you know, their job is to shut those players down. And we're talking about two guys that can produce a bit more than they have this year. Weber has obviously done it his entire career. I think he's the defenseman with the most goals active in the NHL right now. So, obviously he can produce more, but at the same time, the power play has been a little bit cold, and you know, Weber's primary job on the ice right now is to go up against those guys and ensure he's not giving them something that they haven't earned on their own. So it's, I think plus minus is a tough way to look at things. Those guys are depended on for such a difficult job every night that it's kind of like the giveaways too, like every year you could look at a giveaway stat and you'll see that some of the best defensemen in the world are in the top 10. And those are the guys that play the most. So of course the puck's going to be on their stick more often than most players, and they're going to give it away more often. So I don't know. I'm not making an excuse for it. There have been times where they haven't been good enough as a pairing, but it's kind of take it with a grain of salt statistic.
Montreal Canadiens, they still hold the keys to fourth spot in the division. Eric Engels of Sportsnet in Montreal joins Rintoul and Sermon to talk about that and much, much more. It's one of the weird anomalies of this division. Certain teams perform well against others, and they're just tragically bad against other teams in this division. Why has Montreal owned Edmonton and Vancouver and yet has really struggled to find any type of points against Calgary and Ottawa?
Calgary and Ottawa are two different things, so I don't know if I want to lump them together. Calgary, I think the Canadiens have had a hard time making an adjustment to the style that Daryl Sutter's brought to their team. They play a very direct north-south, chip it in, chase it and lock down the walls with the defense. And I think there's a couple ways you need to counter that. If you're not on top of your game in gapping up as defensemen and shutting down the rush and shutting down those opportunities, you're going to be going back to chase those pucks knowing you're getting hit right away. And if you don't have good enough support from your forwards, the defense get caught holding the puck for a little too long and they don't move it efficiently. That's one of the reasons. The other thing is, Dominic Ducharme wants the Canadiens to play a close support system and five men in the picture and Ken Hitchcock style hockey. And when you're playing against that style that the Flames are playing, sometimes you need to be able to stretch the ice out. That's the only way you can back a team off. And I wonder if there's been a flexibility to do that within the system. You always want to assert your own system and your own style of play to a game, but to a certain degree, you have to make adjustments to what the opposition is doing. You don't want to tailor your entire game to what they're doing, but you have to make adjustments to it. And I thought the Canadiens did that on Saturday to start the game. In the first period, they were tremendous, but they weren't able to sustain it because, they looked tired. And I don't know what it is about Calgary, but it just hasn't been a good matchup for them this season. And the games have been hideous to watch for the most part. I think we all want to be entertained to a degree, and it hasn't been anything close to that. And I think Vancouver fans could probably empathize with watching Vancouver and Montreal play against each other and see it be such a one-sided affair. As far as Ottawa's concerned, the Senators have just given a hard time to just about everyone in the division, except for, I guess, Vancouver's done pretty well against them, right?
Vancouver and Edmonton have a combined one right. loss in 16 games against them.
It's odd, and I don't know if it's just how things line up in the schedule when it comes to those two teams and everyone else having a hard time, but there is more of a rivalry between Montreal and Ottawa, more of a rivalry between Toronto and Ottawa, and maybe the Sens get up for those games a little bit more. I went on the air at the beginning of the season and people absolutely destroyed me for saying it, but I said, I don't think the Senators are going to finish last in this division. They're a young team. They brought in a bunch of KG veterans who will keep them competitive, not because they're such good players, but because they're pros. They're good pros who will show the young players the way and how hard you have to compete every night to not get blown out of the rink when you have such a talent deficiency versus some of the other teams in the division. And I knew that they were going to be a hard out for Montreal, and same for Toronto. And, you know, I didn't think that anyone would have as one-sided of a record as Vancouver and Edmonton has had against them this year. But, you know, there's so few games left this season between them and everyone else, and we'll see where it ends up in the end. But, yeah, they have played extremely hard against Montreal. And I think what's been shown and proven over that time, DJ Smith is a very good coach. You know, he's done a really good job getting the commitment from those players, and they're hungry. They've got jobs to earn and jobs to keep. And I've seen it before, you know. Maybe the reason why I picked when I said, you know, they would surprise people and they wouldn't finish last in the division, because I think that would be the best case scenario of them surprising, is because, you know, I saw over the years when Montreal wasn't that great of a team, how competitive they could be anyways. You know, it's when you have good veteran kind of leadership around, a core of young, a nucleus of young players, you tend to be able to turn people's heads and say, well, you know, they're not as bad as people thought they were. So that's, I think that's kind of Ottawa in a nutshell this year. And they've played Montreal really tough.
Yeah, and just to clarify, the stat I gave you was regulation losses. Ottawa's picked up a couple loser points against Vancouver. They didn't pick up any in that 9-game series with Edmonton over the course of this season. So they've changed the roster a lot in Montreal. They changed the head coach. They've changed the goaltending coach, sort of. They've already got a director of goaltending. They're still looking for that guy. They haven't changed a general manager. I'm not saying they should. Do you think there are real consequences if Montreal falls short in getting to the postseason this year?
I would suggest there's a stronger chance we'll see change at that level if the Canadians miss the playoffs than there isn't. You know, I'm not going to come out here and say, oh yeah, they're going to fire Marc Bergevin, or he's going to step away from his job if the Canadians miss the playoffs. But there have been real expectations on the table from the beginning. They were set by ownership and repeated by management and the coaching staff and all the players. And if this team missed the playoffs, there's going to be consequences for it. And I'm not here to make any guarantees or suggest that someone deserves to lose their job or this or that. Just looking at the reality of the situation, and you know, they spent over $100 million in the offseason. They bolstered the depth of the team. I think I wasn't the only one. I think there was a lot of people from across the country that looked at the Canadians and said they had a phenomenal offseason and did a great job, and they should be a playoff team. And more than just being a playoff team, they should be able to do some damage when they get there. And look at how it's gone. I mean, Tyler Toffoli has been unbelievable. You know, he's what is he, fourth in the NHL in scoring with 24 goals. Josh Anderson has lived up to the billing in every way. Tremendous trade there and a signing that a lot of people criticize, but everyone who knows him well enough knows that he's a freight train of a player. Joel Edmondson up until recently was leading the NHL in plus minus. Jake Allen has been a pretty steady contributor. The team hasn't scored goals in front of him, but he's played really well. You know, Corey Perry, like, look what this guy has done this year. I mean, they've made a lot of really good moves. Bergevin made a lot of really good moves. But at the end of the day, it's not about intentions or process. It is about results. And the results better be there in the end. And I think everyone in the organization feels that. And if they're going to hold themselves to that standard, then there would have to be consequences if they had missed the playoffs. Now, I don't believe they're going to miss the playoffs. But we'll see how that statement holds up in a couple of weeks.
Eric, there's been so much breaking news this morning, but Scott and I haven't mentioned this, but Andrew Shaw is retiring at the age of 29 after several concussions. Doctors have recommended that he stops playing hockey, and he's going to listen to them. I know you covered him when he played for the Montreal Canadiens. When you think of him, what do you think of Andrew Shaw as an NHL player? Comes to mind.
You know what, Karen? I think that Andrew Shaw is one of the most competitive people I've ever met. And what I learned about him is not only what was evident on the ice, that he would do anything for his teammates, but off of it, that was clear too. You know, he was a guy that within the room provided that kind of energy and that lightness that teams need. You know, things can get stressful, especially in a market like Montreal, and the walls are closing in. And while he was here, they went through some extended losing streaks at times. And he is that guy that, you know, can keep things light, much like a Brendan Gallagher type of guy. And, you know, I had some great interactions with Andrew. He opened up to me about concealing concussions from doctors and just speaking to the reality of what the NHL was like when he was playing and doing those things. And, you know, we know a lot more now, and players are a lot more comfortable now to speak up when they're injured. But that culture that was so pervasive for so long, you know, he had grown up in that culture, and I don't blame him for doing those things. And I don't blame the doctors. You know, they can only work with what they have at their disposal in terms of information. At the end of the day, it's the patient and the player that ultimately dictates, you know, what information the doctors are able to get to without, you know, certain things at their disposal to diagnose things, you know, more accurately. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I really commend Andrew for opening up at the time he did when we spoke in 2017 about those issues and what he dealt with. He kept playing because he loved the game more than anything. And, you know, I remember him saying that he couldn't envision life without hockey. And I'm happy that over the last few years, he really started to think more about it, because it was a terrible situation to see him go to Chicago after everything he went through in Montreal and prior to that in Chicago before that, you know, and see him suffer another couple of concussions and continuously have this lingering issue hanging over his head. You know, he's got a young family with young kids, and, you know, they need a dad around that's going to be able to function the way he wants to. And he worked so hard to build this life for himself as a guy. You know, he was passed over twice in the draft, and he's a Stanley Cup champion. He's got nothing left to prove. And he was a huge contributor to those runs in Chicago. And he deserves to have the life that he built for himself, and a healthy one, and healing, and feeling better. And I will never forget, you know, like when we're in the room, you know, you joke around with a lot of players, you're off to the side talking to them, whatever. And, you know, I used to pull Arturi Lehkonen's leg about not scoring on a chance in a game or this or that. I said, you know, when are you going to score? And we'd be joking around, and Arturi Lehkonen would poke fun at himself. And Andrew Shaw once witnessed one of those interactions and kind of got it out of context. And when I went to go sit down with him to talk and you know, just kibitz around, he turned to me and said, "You know how hard it is to score a goal in the NHL?" And I said, "Oh, like, don't misunderstand me. I know." Me and Arturi have been joking around like this for a year, you know. He said, "Oh, okay. Like, I just want to make sure you realize, like, because it's not an easy thing. And, like, you shouldn't, you know, you don't know what his confidence is like with that stuff. And you shouldn't." And, it, you know, it's a lesson. But it also, what it taught me is how much he cares about his teammates. And he's a great guy, and I wish him all the best.
Really well said, Eric, as always. Thank you very much for your time. I know you will be tuned in this afternoon, and chances are we're having another conversation like this at some point in the next couple of weeks. Thanks again.
All right. Be well, guys.
That is Eric Engels. Good note that he ends on. You're right. We hadn't got to Andrew Shaw announcing his retirement. A guy who's battled concussion issues back and forth. I think a lot of Flames and Canucks fans will equate that to what Michael Ferland has been going through for.
Yeah.
We haven't heard that name for a very long time. But, you know, you look at what Andrew Shaw said in his retirement video, and I want to make this clear. It doesn't have to be kids or a family in that sense that makes people realize this, but there are a lot of athletes or celebrities who don't realize that there's something bigger to live for outside of their career until they either have someone special in their life or they have a family. And Andrew Shaw, it finally got through to him that there was something more important than what had been most important to him for his entire life. And that's what we should want for everybody, that you have a better life outside of your job than what you do for a living.
Yeah, and Scott, you said, like, a lot of players, especially young players coming up before they get that family or something outside of their sport, like, they equate their self-worth with their job. And, you know, that's not just in sports. It could be in different jobs as well. But, you know, he saw himself as a hockey player, and to be more than a hockey player, a dad, a husband, I think made him realize that, you know, I want to have a good life going forward, and I want to be the best dad that I can be. And playing hockey going forward is not going to allow me to do that, especially in terms of where my brain health is at. So I'm happy. It sucks that he had to walk away this way, but I'm happy he made the decision to listen to his doctors. And that's why I wanted to ask Eric the question about Andrew Shaw, because, again, you mentioned Michael Ferland. I think we haven't heard it. We haven't heard from much of him. and I have a feeling that this is the end for Michael Ferland as well. But I, again, he's got a young family, and I want him to be able to take a look and step back and say, you don't have to play hockey anymore. That's okay. You know, just you've got your family and be the best dad you can be.
One final segment to go in the show, which means one more Upper Deck clue for you, a last chance to get your name into the mix, get an opportunity to win an Upper Deck starter kit. We will give you that clue on the other side. We'll announce our winners in our last segment as well. It's time for notes and quotes, and we have a number, and it'll give you some idea as to how much better things have gotten for the National Hockey League and how tough they are. I'll explain next on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
We're going to give a few people one last chance to get in on this conversation, or at least in on the opportunity to win an Upper Deck starter kit. We're doing this every day this week, and we're giving away two per day. Scott Rintoul, it's Karen Sermon. And here's what you get if you win. Trading card binder that holds up to 252 cards. You're going to get some cards to put in that binder. Three packs of 2020, 2021, Upper Deck Series 1. I always thought they should have just called this the 21 series because there were no games played in 2020, but I digress. One exclusive sophomore sensations card, one poster, one trading card collector's guide. 960, 960, 650, 650. We're going to give you the last clue now. It's an active player who was a number one overall pick in the NHL entry draft, has the longest active point streak in the NHL right now, is not the captain of his NHL team. And the final clue, Karen?
He is a Memorial Cup winner. He is a Memorial Cup winner.
So those are your four clues. You should have it by now. A lot of people do. A lot of people are qualified. Jamie will randomly select one from the Vancouver inbox and one from the Calgary inbox, and we will get those announced by the end of the segment. But an opportunity for a few more people to get in on that random selection. Yep. Karen, the number has come in, and it's a nice number for the NHL. Remember where we were with the last deal on NBC. In the American broadcast rights, like around $200 million. Not much past $200 million. The ESPN deal came in at around $420, $430. There's some debate as to what that actual number ends up being. The TNT number has come in, and when you add it all together, we're talking around $650, $655 million for the NHL overall on its American broadcasting deals.
So it's Turner's going to pay in the neighborhood of $225 million per season over its 7-year deal, Scott. So by all end of that, that is $1.6 billion. So when you add what the ESPN is paying and what the Turner is paying, of course, that is a significant chunk of change every year. And at the end of this deal, this is the biggest deal that the NHL has ever seen. But Scott, Gary Bettman knew going into this season that these numbers were coming, but maybe not at this point. Like, he knew there was going to be a new American television deal. He just wasn't sure what the numbers were going to be. So again, all expectation is there's going to be a flat cap next year. And you and I were talking about this on air. I think that this points to is the fact that, okay, now these numbers are coming in. I don't think there's going to be any increase in the salary cap. So what does that mean about what the damage of this pandemic did over the past year and a half? Like, it's significant. And it's going to take years for the NHL to get out of it.
Yeah,
and Gary Bettman has said that.
The fact that you're 2.5, 3 times your old American television deal and you can't increase your salary cap, that tells you just how devastating financially this has been. And we'll see how long it takes. But this is why they decided last summer we got to get back and play. We got to find a way to award the Stanley Cup. This is why we're going to have to get some health and safety protocol in place. And maybe it's against better judgment during the course of a pandemic, but we've got to get back on the ice because we got a lot of sponsorship to make up for, and we just got to mitigate our losses. Like, this money's coming, but it doesn't make everything whole. but pretty good numbers coming in for the National Hockey League on what will be a very busy, busy Monday. Three games involving Canadian competition, six teams on ice. You can do the math on that. Eight games overall. The ones that matter the most in Western Canada. Well, this matters in Eastern Canada as well. Montreal at Calgary is the first one. Last meeting of the season between these teams. We said before the five-game set, and this is the back three, they got to go at least 4-1, does Calgary, if they're going to make this race. Well, they're 3-1 so far, Karen. They've got a chance to make it 4.
You know what? They've set them up. They've set themselves up for like a good point, right, Scott? Because they only do have that one loss. They're 4 points back of fourth with one game in hand. Montreal has one game in hand on Calgary. But again, you win this one for Calgary, you're looking, Scott, at how many games down the stretch do you have? How many games have they played? 47 games. So right now you have 8 games left. After tonight, you have 7 games left, and you're 2 points out. Like, that looks a lot more manageable than 7 games left and 6 points out. Like, this is just completely optically. Like, I am all about the fact that there is a playoff race right now because mathematically it can work for either Vancouver or Calgary. But you just set yourself up for a better push down the stretch if you get this win. And against a team that you've looked better against. Like, you have looked like the better team in the last two games against Calgary. Or, sorry,
overall,
against Montreal.
Overall, yeah. 6-2 this season against the Montreal Canadiens. This is the final of the 9-game set between the two. Vancouver should be cheering for Calgary tonight, a Calgary that will be without Noah Hanifin tonight and the rest of the way. A little bit of update on that. I guess during the last road trip when they were playing in Montreal, that's where Hanifin originally hurt the shoulder, but it got worsened on Saturday night with the hit that we saw. Obviously, it took whatever that shoulder injury was to a place where it required season-ending surgery. It was something he could play through in the meantime. Now he gets hit again. He's done, so they're not going to have to go with 5 defensemen the way they did on Saturday night, but they will have to make up for the absence of what many would call the best defenseman in Calgary this year?
Yeah, I think you could argue that he's one of them for sure. I mean, Chris Tanev, of course, has had a pretty good season, and Daryl Sutter not mincing words, and he might be doing this, Scott, too, because he knows that Noah Hanifin's out, who he has sung his praises this season. But I don't think we have an audio clip of this, but I'll read you the quote. He says, "I think that one of the reasons we're not in a playoff spot is that there are 3 to 4 young defensemen who have not played up to their expectations this season." Says those players need to step up now to fill the void for Noah Hanifin's absence. Whether or not this is Daryl Sutter trying to light a fire under those players, Scott, understanding that he's going to have to rely on them down the stretch. You can't play Chris Tanev and Mark Giordano for 40 minutes a game, so he's going to need some help there too. But it's funny how Daryl Sutter decides he's going to go at things, right? Because sometimes he'll sing their praises, and sometimes he might look at these young players and say, you know what, I can't say these things. But no, he's like, you guys got to be better. We're losing one of our top defensemen. Here you go, guys.
Well, it's pretty easy to see who he's talking about, and that's been evident with the play. We've seen how Rasmus Anderson has had such an up-and-down season, a guy that was expected to do a lot this year, and it really has been a turbulent campaign for Rasmus Anderson. Yusuf Alamaki, coming off the injury, was going to be a big part of the Flames' blue line, and people expect that he's going to be for years to come. But this is a guy who's been a healthy scratch under Daryl Sutter, and he's been back at times, but he has had some bad turnovers. He has not done things consistently the Sutter way. There's another guy he's talking about. Nesterov makes his way in, not exactly young compared to the two. Maybe he's referencing a guy like Oliver Shillington, who they had expectations for this year, but certainly Anderson and Valimaki are a big part of what he's talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And Scott, he's telling them, like, right now, you haven't played up to the standards that I want you to play. Here's your chance, because you're going to get some minutes down the stretch. And if we want to make any playoff push, we need you guys.
So Vancouver will be hoping for Calgary to win that game. That game gets going a half an hour before the Canucks and Senators will do battle in the nation's capital. They have dominated Ottawa results-wise. But if you've watched the games, and I think a lot of you have, they've been a lot closer lately. Ever since Elias Pettersson was out of the lineup, like, Vancouver got those early three. They swept the Senators early in the season. Then they had to go to Ottawa. They got out of there with a couple of really scrappy overtime shootout victories. Ottawa comes in, wins the first game of this 4-game set last Thursday. Vancouver counters on Saturday night. The results say Vancouver 6, Ottawa 1 as far as wins and losses. There's a couple of loser points in there. But as we all know, Ottawa not exactly an easy out. There's the cross-country travel and the fact that Vancouver, no matter what goaltending decision it was going to make, had its hand forced in that regard.
Yeah, Braden Holtby will start tonight, and we'll see what that means going down the stretch on this four-game road trip. Scott, for our listeners that don't know, Thatcher Demko was injured in morning skate today. Appears, Scott, from your what you're hearing, it's not super serious, but Silvas will be the backup tonight. Of course, no Mikey DiPietro because the Canucks made the decision late last week on the weekend to send him down to Utica to get some game action, play about 8 out of the last 10 games is probably the expectation for him, because some people are asking, well, what about Mikey DiPietro? Well, he's no longer with the team. So it is Braden Holtby's net right now, and this sucks, Scott, because what I was thinking about this morning was, you know, to go on a run, what the Canucks kind of have to go on, considering how jam-packed the schedule is, like, you need both goaltenders. And what the Canucks have earlier on this season? Like, Thatcher Demko most nights was probably their best player on the ice, or at least he showed that. Like, he was really good. And then Braden Holtby, when he came in, it's just that he couldn't make that next save. And since they've had him back from the pandemic, he's 2-1 now. But
no, he's 3-0.
He's 3-0. Yeah. The one loss
Demko
is Demko.
Lost the one game.
Sorry, 3-0. But he's shown, Scott, the Braden Holtby that we thought maybe we'd get with some work with Ian Clark. So they're going to need that Braden Holtby. But it's just disappointing to me that, and hopefully it's not the case, that Thatcher Demko can come back and maybe play later on this road trip.
Any run that you were constructing mentally for the Vancouver Canucks to go on involved two goaltenders. And your point is very well made. And just to give you some context as to what the schedule is going to be. So Calgary and Montreal are going to play this afternoon. Vancouver and Ottawa are going to play this afternoon. After that, there's a span of 16 days between April 27th and May 12th. In that span, Calgary's going to play 5 times. So less than once every 3 days. Vancouver will play 9 times in that same span. So more than once every 2 days. Just to give you an idea of how these games are going to start to flush out after today. Calgary's going to be sitting back, going to be waiting a long time in between games. And if things are going well, maybe they want a little more rhythm. Vancouver, man, put your feet up when you get a chance, because there's not going to be much of that opportunity over the next little while. Travis Green knows that, and he was asked today about the concept of having to manage his roster and figure out how he's going to rotate fresh bodies in and keep this group energized.
Probably going to have to. We've been looking and trying to eye up some days where we might get a practice in or need a practice. So we're going to have to pick and choose wisely. There might be days where part of our team skates and part of our team doesn't. Obviously, the guys that play higher minutes, you got to keep them rested as well. And you got to watch out for injuries. And you know, we're going to have to be on top of it. But, you know, that happens a lot when you get into the playoffs as well, where you're not skating as much near the end of the season. I said that at the beginning of the year, that I think it's important in those first, you know, through exhibition and the start of a season, practice is very important. But as in any year when the season wears on, you usually start to taper back, and definitely when you get into playoff mode.
In Vancouver, that is a 4 o'clock puck drop, 7 o'clock in Ottawa. The Calgary game starts half an hour before that, 4:30 Mountain Time, 3:30 puck drop if you're watching and scoreboard watching from the West Coast. Sometimes, Karen, when you have the dual screens going, you kind of want one period to end when the next game gets going. I think that's the kind of timing you're hoping for if you're doing a little scoreboard watching today.
Yeah, I think the half an hour is good, though. I hate when, like, you've got the 2 4 o'clock games on the Saturday. And usually in a normal time, Scott, you can count on the Toronto game probably dropping the puck 20 minutes after 4 o'clock because of all the pregame ceremonies they do there. Of course, not so much in COVID time, so you generally end. But yeah, this is like a perfect kind of, okay, you start the first game, intermission happens, you can get the second game, see most of that first period, and then, you know, it kind of works out perfectly tonight. And you know what? Both Calgary and Vancouver should be watching both games, because these are key games for both franchises.
Yeah, I'd say that Montreal is probably watching both games more than Calgary. Calgary's just worried about its own lot, and it'll figure things out against Vancouver at the end of the season. Just trying to track down Montreal, and can help out Vancouver in that process if Calgary's able to get over in this game. The other game in the North Division, more for playoff jockeying than anything else. Edmonton and Winnipeg, we know they're both getting in. They're going to play a couple of times here. Oilers have dominated this season series to date. It's counterintuitive, but that's the way that it's gone. Paul Maurice confirming that they will be without the services of one of their best players, arguably their best forward this season, for the rest of the regular season.
Mick's going to be out for the remainder of the regular season. We're confident and hopeful that he'll be back for the start of the playoffs.
Nikolai had a few kind of, I guess, close calls the other night. Was it the hit on Muzzin that ultimately has led to this and his upper body?
I don't know that I can nail it to one. I think he got into a bunch of different collisions. He finished the game. He's a tough young man. But I don't know that we can pinpoint one specifically.
Did you see him going at it with Joe Thornton the other night? They got into it pretty good.
Yeah, I
loved
it. Ehlers
gave him the spear at one point. I mean, it wasn't like the worst spear you've ever seen, but, man, they got into it. Thornton's jawing at him in the penalty box.
Well, the best part about the jawing in the penalty box, Scott, was it started, they were both going at each other, and then Ehlers kind of was just done. He was just squirting some water in his from the water bottle. Well, Joe's just, you can see him beaking still, and Ehlers is kind of laughing like, okay. This is over. This is done. You can continue, but I'm done with this right now. So, you know what, though? He's a massive loss for them. Like, what he's been doing this season, he's been phenomenal for them. And now they're down two forwards, one center, another winger. Of course, and Lowry's not playing tonight as well. And do you know, like, this is for Edmonton. It's their stretch run. They've got two against Winnipeg, final two against Winnipeg this season. They haven't played since Wednesday. It's that loss to Montreal. And they probably wanted some rest after those two games against Montreal because Montreal played them so heavy. But for Edmonton, like, you talk about other teams not getting rest. Like, the way that their schedule, and I know it's probably jam-packed down the stretch, but this is pretty lucky to get what they got.
Well, it's not jam-packed until they see the Canucks. And this is what it's going to be like for every team in the division the rest of the way, is that there are going to be a bunch of days in between games. Vancouver sat for 25 days without watching a game involving its team. And now it's going to be kind of like that, not quite to that extent for other markets, but Vancouver's going to play seemingly every night, and other markets are going to be sitting around, practice days, monitoring injuries, that sort of thing, until they actually see the Canucks. The Oilers have four straight in early May against the Vancouver Canucks, and maybe one more on that final Saturday of the season. We'll see if Connor McDavid plays in that game or not. We got to get your contest winners before we're done here. By the way, there are five other games, American Division. There's some playoff implications. Some teams can clinch tonight, specifically in the Central. We're going to see this more on a daily basis now. We saw it already in the West Division, teams clinching, Karen, and we're going to see this a little more in the Central coming up and maybe the East here pretty soon as well.
Yeah, we've seen all three teams, top three teams in the West, Vegas, Colorado, and Minnesota have clinched. And not to get into all the scenarios, but Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay can all clinch tonight. Tampa Bay is idle. They need the Panthers to beat the Predators in regulation for that to happen. Of course, if the Panthers win in regulation against the Predators or just beat them in any fashion, they are in. And Carolina's in with, if they get 1 point against Dallas. So Carolina and Florida in action tonight, Tampa not, but all three of those teams, Scott, can clinch a playoff spot tonight.
Mentioned the Colorado Avalanche. They're important to our upper deck giveaway today because said player plays for the Avalanche. Who is our mystery man?
Nathan MacKinnon, Scott. Nate MacKinnon. He, first overall pick, has the most points, active points streak in the NHL. Not a captain of his team. Again, like the Mark Scheifele, I probably would have made that mistake as well. Not the captain, that is Gabriel Landeskog. And, of course, he won the Memorial Cup with
Halifax Mooseheads back in the day. He has a 13-game point streak. He can match his career-long point streak if he's able to notch one tonight. Congratulations going out to, in Vancouver, Anthony in White Rock in the Vancouver text message inbox in Calgary. It was Roy in Airdrie. Congratulations. Promotions will be in touch. You will get your starter kit from Upper Deck. You get some cards, a trading binder, a sensations card, a sophomore sensations card, a poster, and a trading card collector's guide. We'll be doing this each and every day, so if you were not fortunate enough to be chosen today, get in tomorrow. We will give you clues each and every day. That'll do it for the business of the show. That was a busy one today, Karen.
It was. Usually, Scott, we get off the air at about 1 o'clock and all the breaking news comes down and the shows after us get to tackle that. But it was nice today to have something happen during the show. Of course, never good to actually, you know, have to report injuries, Scott. But it's nice that some stuff happened. And yeah, very busy show for a Monday.
Well, and if you want a little more, if you want to call this breaking news, I think if you were following over the course of the weekend, you assumed this was coming. This will only spice things up more in Montreal.
Right.
Patrick Roy exploring NHL return as head coach or GM. Gee, I wonder what market they're going to talk about this in a lot today. It was already trending over the weekend, so now we have confirmation that he's exploring another NHL opportunity.
Fuel to the fire. I don't know if it's a good thing to have Patrick Roy in this discussion. I don't know if Montreal Canadiens fans would want him behind the bench. He did an okay job, I guess, in Colorado. But I will say this, Scott. He is one of my favorite people to interview. It's back when I was covering the Canucks for a different station at that time and would do the away locker room and got to interview Patrick Roy. Man, oh man. That guy will give you a quote. And he's funny at it, too. It's not the Daryl Sutter quote. It's the funny quote.
Maybe, or he might breathe fire at you. You have no idea what Patrick Roy is going to do on a daily basis. Like, you have no idea. He is random as they come.
I guess I got him on a good day. I'm guessing back then Colorado probably beat Vancouver, so he's pretty happy. But, yeah, it was a fun interview, that's for sure.
She's Karen Sermon. I'm Scott Rintoul. You mentioned the fire. We're going to turn things up with the big show in Calgary. They will count you down to puck drop. Early one today, Pat Steinberg and co. getting you there in Vancouver. Bick and the Boss leading into the pregame show between the Senators and the Vancouver Canucks. Thanks for listening. All of you who contributed at 960, 960, 650, 650. Enjoy the hockey today. We're going to have something to talk about one way or another tomorrow morning, and we'll be back with you on Rintoul and Sermon.